Hey, everybody, and welcome to Watchmen with Jay, Jack, and Matt. My name is Jay.
I'm Matt.
And I'm come back to New York. Nah, I don't think so.
And welcome to the show. How's it going, guys?
Pretty good. I was hoping Jack would go with I'm the puppy incinerator, but you know, New York.
I've had a lot written down, but that's just mean. I had Bible Boy survives, Mirror Ooh. Guy. There was a lot to choose from in this episode.
Oh my gosh, this episode, right?
There's a lot of potent quotables, and it makes you also kind of reconsider Lady True last week if she would have really, you know, killed the baby or something, just the way they kind of...
Because now I think she would have.
Yeah.
I don't think she was good. Yeah, that puppy's a little small. All right. You want him? No. What am I going to do with dog?
Oh, man. Well, what was neat about this episode, watching it with my wife Colleen, who hasn't read the comics, and she saw the movie, but we saw it in theaters. When was that? Almost 10 years ago, whenever the movie came out.
Sure, 2009, I think.
So, you know, I was quickly trying to kind of explain to her the whole like giant squid monster thing ending to the comic that wasn't in the movie, and then really this kind of opened with it. So I was like, oh, cool. Like I think like this episode really kind of caught everybody up. Post 85 events, which I thought made for, you know, not only did we get Looking Glass's backstory, but we also, I think, kind of caught up to, I guess, the main Watchmen storyline in this as well.
Wait, Looking Glass, you mean Mirror Guy?
You tell him that.
I will. I'll tell him. I don't care.
He likes to go by Wade on his off days. Yeah. So. I'm right there with you, Jay. Like the whole opening sequence where we finally get the squid, the octopus, the attack, the psychic attack. I mean, it was great because it was like seeing those pages of the comic book come to life. And for those that were disappointed in that aspect of Zack Snyder's rendition of Watchmen, we finally got it, and it felt like it didn't disappoint either, because we did get a backstory in there. We got kind of like the origin story of Wade.
You guys being comic book guys, did you know that was Bible Boy, 1985?
Well, Looking Glass isn't in the comics at all, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and. It really, I mean, when it started off, like I accidentally just kind of missed the part where it said 1985. So at first I thought this was 1945 until I start seeing all of the 80s references. And I'm like, oh no, this is 85. This is clearly like not 1945.
I don't think Wham was in 1945, were they? Was it Wham?
Yeah, it was Wham, Careless Whisper.
Yeah, is it Wham that does it, or is it just George Michael?
It was on Wham's album. I have it. I'm looking on the name of the album. But Careless Whisper.
Wake me up before you go.
Now before we get any of those really cool 80s songs, they do play Strauss' Blue Danube in the background, mm-hmm. which comes up again later with the fight sequence. So I thought that was kind of a cool little tie-in there where we had two versions of the Blue Danube playing. So.
Well, that, and you also had Mozart's Lacrimosa, which was, that was Lacrimosa. I think it was Lacrimosa in the, you know, the warehouse scene. So it was a nice smattering of classical with 80s and then Atticus Ross and Trent Reznor score. So it was honestly for me, some of my favorite types of music. So I was really digging the score and music in this episode.
And since we're talking about the music, I just wanted to mention the song The Promise by Sturgill Simpson plays. And that song, I was introduced first through The Leftovers because it appears in season 2, episode 9. It's in a kind of a country bar scene where Meg and Tom are like dancing together. It's a very like sweet scene between the two of them. And when they started playing it in this episode, I was like, holy cow, they're going back to this song. So I was really happy to hear that song. So anyway,
I mean, but is that kind of lazy on Damon, though, to kind of just reach for songs?
To go back the well, he's like, I only like one country song, and it's The Promise. So,
it's all we're going to listen to.
That album was Wham! Make It Big, if anybody was interested. And then I also really dug there's a cover of it by this guitarist that kind of does it by, like, plays it all on just one guitar, just his hands, but then, like, plays the lead, the melody, the rhythm, all at the same time, which is really cool. He's a Russian guy. He's like Miko or something like that. Let me try and...
Now, that's later in the episode, right? Because
yeah,
I
like
thought this was
at the end, right?
No, it was in the middle, kind of. There was like three. There was the original and two covers. The middle one was by that guitar one was by Alexander Misko, is the guitarist's name.
Misko.
It's really cool, though. Check it out on YouTube after this episode. If you haven't seen it yet, it's pretty neat how he does it.
It's interesting that several of these songs appear twice with different people. Doing their version. So, you know, as Jack mentioned earlier, you know, New York, New York, we get the Frank Sinatra version, as well as a Frank Sinatra, Some Enchanted Evening. And it ends on that song as well. I couldn't figure out who the singer was at the very end.
Colleen said it was from South Pacific. And I was like, oh.
I didn't think it was the South Pacific version, though. But I could be. I could be wrong. Again, these are our immediate reactions. I just thought that it was really cool that there were multiple versions of songs appearing throughout this episode.
Maybe it was a Joe Piscopo version of Frank Sinatra.
No.
But,
okay.
But maybe it goes to pointing out this whole idea of extra dimensional, you know.
Good call, Matt.
Multiple versions of the same song.
That's
so,
a great call out.
Well, that's what you guys brought me along for. So.
But yeah, so I think for an episode where the preview was, oh, it's gonna be Wade Looking Glass's backstory. Let's dig into that aspect of this episode.
Yes.
And you know, with the opening scene, with kind of his origin story, and I love how it was very much like a comic book origin story where, you know, before it's like, oh, he's Looking Glass because the thing he's wearing is like reflective. That makes sense. But in here, you almost had like the, you know, Bruce Wayne was scared of bats and that's where he chose Batman. And here, you know, he's in this fun house and when the, you know, the psychic blast happens and, you know, the glass shatters all around him, giving him his 7 years of bad luck. But it had like a really neat comic book origin story feel to it. So I really dug that opening sequence. Plus even just, I mean, movies and TV shows with funhouse mirror scenes are like almost cliche at this point, but I thought it was a really neat scene where they were both.
Well, how did he survive?
Cause I think he's probably inside the funhouse.
But the glass was flying everywhere.
Right. It definitely cut him up.
Yeah, I mean, there were other people outside, too, that had survived, too. So not everybody died, but a lot of
people. I'm just saying, you're in a funhouse with all that glass.
Hey, you just didn't be ducked. I mean, you saw how skinny he was. It was very thin.
That's true,
I mean,
yeah.
It's hard to get a hit on him.
Mirror guy needs to eat. He needs to put on some...
Perhaps that's why he doesn't like the term mirror guy, is because he actually doesn't like mirrors.
Nice so. One, Matt. That's two for two for Matt.
Sure. Well,
good job. The girl was a bit of a jerk, wasn't she?
Yeah, but there's like 80s punker kids, right? Aren't they all jerks?
Yeah, I think so.
There's an interesting moment here at the very beginning because he's with this church group that's going to go out this 1 minute before midnight and try to convert people. But as he's walking through this crowd, I was noticing that he's seeing some of the seven deadly sins. He sees these girls eating, gluttony. He sees this guy looking at this this vite thing. So there's envy, and then this couple's making out. There's lust. I couldn't find sloth, but basically he's pride by going into this lion. You know what they called it? They didn't call it a lion's den, a whore's den. And he starts, you know, his preaching, and then you kind of get wrath and greed thrown in there with the people trying to beat him up, and then the girl
taking his tie. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I just thought it was kind of interesting that we were seeing some of that kind of play out.
You know, he was the only one that didn't bow his head, though, and close his eyes when they had the prayer.
Oh. Hmm.
he was kind of looking around, and the guy that was with him, I guess the head guy, the older guy, he was looking at him.
Well, maybe he already knew that Wade was kind of, you know, a little fractured. Like, maybe he kind of saw the cracks in Wade as it was and was trying to keep him on the...
Well, I do think there's an element that, you know, especially for where he was at, he was afraid even before this event, right? And he was trying to save people's souls probably as well as kind of find, you know, his own self through this program. And, you know, the psychic event was just like enabled probably his worst predilections. So that was pretty cool from my perspective. And then the other thing was the pandas on the brochure. What is with the pandas in this show? So you have Panda, right? One of the people on the precinct or whatever, and then you have the pandas on the brochure. What's with the
Damon
pandas?
Damon likes pandas.
They also do in the pullback shot. So as after Wade's, you know, like revelation, and he's kind of screaming, and it pulls back all the way back to the squid. As it's pulling back, we do see pandas hanging in one of the little amusement park games, you know. Around.
Oh, really? I didn't see that.
There's some stuff.
I was more focused on he's in front of the funhouse. It's the clown's got a big mouth. Looks like he's screaming, and he's screaming.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know what's up with the pandas, like what that symbolizes. So,
it's like Psyche and the pineapples.
Or it's like Lost in the polar bears. He's kind of just each show that he has us have a different bear. So this one is panda bears. I don't know what leftovers was, but
is it Andy Panda? What's the cartoon? I don't remember.
But so you know, after that, it kind of ties into the main storyline with Angela trying to figure out what these pills are, we meet his ex-wife, and we also find out what his profession is. But anybody find that kind of weird that he's like a whatever those are called?
It's a survey consultant. He was a consultant, right?
No, he's like he basically kind of like lie detector tested focus groups to figure out what they really want.
Oh, but, yeah, that's right.
So I thought that was interesting, and I also thought, you know, his relationship with his ex-wife was interesting. But any thoughts there, even the aside of this weird kind of pet cloning business? maybe Barbara Streisand is like, you know, in with Robert Redford, and then she kind of brought her dog cloning to a higher level.
Well, you never want to say goodbye to your pet, right? That is the hardest thing. You know, saying goodbye to your loved ones, saying goodbye to a pet, that's the hardest thing in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I've had pets before where I've thought, I really like you. I wish I could clone you. You're such a good dog.
Yeah.
The problem with cloning, though, is that you basically cells will always degrade. So even if you, like, replicate the animal, it's not going to live for, you know, it's going to live however many years from that point in which you took their cells. So, you know, if it's an 8-year-old dog, it may only live another 2 years if you clone it. Unless they figure
that's
that out.
That's why you got that's why they had multiple dogs there.
That's true.
Here's another, and I know we're going through the episode, but we're also kind of jumping around. That's what we do with our initial takes. But do you think these nostalgia pills that have people's memories, do you think that's some way to transfer from one clone to another?
Yeah. Like, that's a really
I would think so.
I was doing just kind of some brief looking through Watchmen.
So is Will a clone?
Is Will a clone?
We talked about that last week.
Yeah, I know. We've talked about it before. I think we've been talking about it since day one.
Yeah. It seems like they're kind of leading us there, you know, because
they're basically hitting us over the head with it. So
yeah, with the genetic testing and now with the dogs. So, you know, clearly in this world, cloning and genetic manipulation is pretty common or very
pretty,
easily doable.
Pretty good.
Well, there was a little bit of a, I don't know if it confirms something, but in the Vite sequence, the closed captioning said clones exclaim or clones, you know, it basically was kind of filling in for what those other people were doing, and it referred to them as clones, So I thought that was an interesting, like, closed captioning, you know, confirmation, like, that those figures are clones, I guess. So, anyway.
He has his, in his house, he has his own kind of emergency alert system, which I thought was funny and sad.
But, and he kind of over-tested it.
Yeah, I think he might have broken it. especially if you're testing it all the time, like, I don't know, I feel like, anyways, that's probably...
Well, 5,000 times, how long did he have it for?
I know, right?
Because they recommend every 6 months you give it a test, or 6 weeks, I think, every day.
But then, you know, he has like a support group that he leads, and he meets a new person who you might recognize, who played Trixie. Right? Yeah, Trixie on Deadwood. And she's also on Lost, little known fact.
On Lost, and she's also on, what was the show after Battlestar Galactica? BSG.
Caprica.
She's on Caprica.
Oh, that's right. Forgot about Caprica.
You know she's on a lot of shows, actually.
She's not in The Mandalorian, so...
No. And she's an Irish actor.
And then, you know, they're out having dinner, and, you know, he definitely is kind of connecting with this person. But, you know, as she gets picked up, it seems to be the same truck from the first episode. Cabbage falls out. He follows it, and it actually was a trap for him. And then we have this scene and this reveal of something that we were saying probably first episode or second episode that we thought Senator Keene was with the Calvary.
Yeah.
And then we also get confirmation that Judd was with them as well. And, you know, he's playing the, you know, these people, a lot of these people are like, you know, bad people, but I'm the smart one that's actually keeping us from, you know, becoming bad again or whatever. And he basically wants to enlist Looking Glass to kind of basically sideline
Angela.
Yeah. And he's going to do this by convincing him by showing him a video that he saw when he became a senator. And it is basically Ozymandias talking to Robert Redford when he's inaugurated in 1993. And basically kind of admitting to the entire the squid monster hoax. And I thought this scene was insane, first of all. Second of all, it was just a really awesome scene. It kind of definitely, like I said in the beginning, brought the main storyline from the original comic book series straight into the crosshairs of what's going on in this universe.
Yeah, and that wall of monitors reminded me of, you know, something that Ozymandias would have done. Mm-hmm. You know, in the last comic, you see his wall of monitors. So the fact that, you know, they're not just showing him on one TV, it's a whole wall, you know. And so I thought that was a nice callback to the comic as well. Not only just giving us the plot or an explanation, but really pushing that down the line and connecting the events of 1985 all the way 7 years, I think, is brought up as well in that video, which ties into the whole 7 years bad luck, 7 years that he was with his wife, girlfriend, you know, like, I mean, so I just thought that it was kind of an interesting, like, the idea that 7 years kind of popped up again. So, and the 92 thing. So Redford's elected, I guess again in 92, but the Pale Horse was released in 92. She talks about this movie that Spielberg made, which is basically a Schindler's List for this Watchmen world, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a nice tie-in, like connecting something that an event that also is referenced in the comic. There was a lot of comic callbacks in this episode. Even the idea of nostalgia as a drug is kind of I couldn't find references to the drug nostalgia in the original Watchmen, but there is in one of their panels a little advertisement from Veidt for nostalgia. So I don't know if they just took that like from like an ad in the background of one of their panels and just said, what's nostalgia? Let's make it a drug. Yeah. But interesting that that also appears in the original Watchmen comic. So, sorry, a lot of thoughts still going on in my mind as far as like the ways that this connected and then also made things new. Jack, as being a non-comic book reader, it still worked for you? Like this episode was still
because it's a fascinating story. So for me, I like the mystery and I like trying to figure out what's going on. So yeah, I like it.
But did it? I guess for the comic book lover and Matt and I, this was all like kind of like, you know, reaffirming and really tying it into the original storyline, which is like really satisfying for us. For you, as maybe not that fan, did it make sense? Did it feel like a reveal that had impact versus, you know?
Well, not so much was like a reveal that had impact to me, but I was like, okay, I want to know more about what's going on, more of that. Whereas I'm, you know, not knowing the backstory of it, I want to know more. I want to know more. Tell me more. Tell me more. Well, but no, it's like, okay, this is fascinating. This is okay. What's going on here? What's going on here? What's going on there? It's an interesting story that's going on. And I think like most, I'm sure there's a lot of people like me that never read the comics. I saw the movie, but to me, I'm enjoying the ride so far. I like trying to figure things out. So sometimes it's better not to know.
The reveal of Senator Keene as being part of 7th Cavalry. Again, I think we were all expecting this.
Yeah, that was
Judd as well. But ramifications here to the greater story. I think we're getting more to what their motivations are. It seems, I would think, they want to kind of unveil the lie of the great hoax of 11-2. But you know, they're messing with these transportation devices. You know, they're armed with this video that he was able to steal. And, you know, if they are followers of Rorschach, who was, you know, the original truth teller to this, or trying to get the word out about what, you know, Ozymandias really did, even, and he was killed for it. What are thoughts here about what was revealed with 7th Cavalry and where do we think it is going? Because we got a lot more details here.
So what are you guys saying? The 7th Cavalry is really not—they're not the bad guys. They just get the bad rap.
Well, it's what I like about Watchmen. It's always everybody is both bad, or they think they're good. And 7th Cavalry is definitely probably on the bad side, as they are kind of, you know, a white supremacist.
Yeah, they were the ones in Tulsa, so right.
In terms of their motivations and whatever thing they're going to do. You know, where do we think that is? Like, do we think they're going to try and have their own event or just to try and unveil the great lie?
Is Robert Redford involved in the 7th Cavalry?
No, I think he's the opposite of that. I think that's why.
I don't think he would give his name to the 7th Cavalry.
No. I think, obviously, the 7th Cavalry is the opposite of whatever Robert Redford is. And I think reveal... Because, you know, if it seems that Robert Redford and whatever political party he's with is, you know, the left, and then, you know, the Cavalry is on the right side of things.
I also wonder too if it's kind of maybe Veidt's played both sides, right? Like maybe he's played both left and right, and 7th Cavalry is just this other faction. You know, I mean, it has political leanings that are more right-leaning, but I don't know. It's just
it's happened
thought.
Before.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, just the fact that Veidt manipulated things to make it so that Redford was elected. I mean, we learned that. That's kind of a huge deal, the fact that he's planned this out. Like, I mean, it's just that methodical of a you know, it's crazy.
It's like Redford made an indecent proposal or something. I don't know.
But I think when you look at Ozymandias, that's what he does, right? He's the smartest man in the world. And, you know, absolutely, I could see him maybe playing both sides. But it seems like he's been out of the game for, you know, 4 years. And maybe a lot of this is kind of going on without his direct involvement, which, you know, it seems that he set up Ozymandias has set up a house of cards, and Lady True is possibly a part of that growth, or maybe she's turned on Ozymandias, we don't know. But see, she seems to be on that side of things. Robert Redford was put in place, essentially, according to Ozymandias, by him. And the 7th Cavalry is looking to knock down this house of cards that Adrian Veidt has set up. So it is interesting, and I'm curious to see what they're going to do. But it definitely seems like they're going to try and unveil or turn or flip the status quo as it's been since, you know, 30 years post 11-2.
Okay, so here was a thought that I had after we podcasted last week. And then, because I was thinking about Lady True's, like, motivations, right? So we know that she comes from Vietnam. Perhaps she is wanting to stop Dr. Manhattan from what he did in Vietnam, perhaps. And we heard time travel mentioned in this episode, too, didn't we?
Yeah, I believe, you know, he was... he was saying Hooded Justice is Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah.
Time travel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was talking about how Hooded Justice was Dr. Manhattan or something, and they were just kind of joking about time travel. But what if True's, you know, purpose with that clock is to actually, you know, somehow either go back to before Dr. Manhattan became Dr. Manhattan, that moment in the matter accelerator. I can't remember what it's called. Sorry, guys.
Are you saying to, like, change the result of the Vietnam War?
No, go back in time before Dr. Manhattan becomes Dr. Manhattan. You stop Dr. Manhattan from becoming god, and you've destroyed God, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You've stopped this thing from ever taking place. The whole.
Well, you said she had connections. True had connections to Vietnam. Maybe she wants to go back and change history. To where,
well, Vietnam, Matt was just where
the, yeah, you take Dr. Manhattan out of the equation of Vietnam, and the U.S. doesn't win Vietnam.
Right. So maybe that's her goal.
Right.
Right.
So, perhaps maybe these teleporters are, I don't know. I have no idea, but maybe these teleporters are involved in some way, and I don't know. It seems like the 7th Cavalry and Lady True are on two different teams, and they're not really playing together. Yep. But
I would agree
with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but anyway, that was one idea that I had about that clock and what she's trying to accomplish with it.
Yeah, because so. If Lady True is kind of partnered with Will Reeves, and he killed Judd, who was the 7th Cavalry, they definitely right. are on opposite sides of this, right?
Yes.
Or it would seemingly be that would be the case. But either way. It's obvious we've been getting a lot of clues in this episode with 7th Cavalry and what they're going to do, and I'm curious to see, because I didn't see any watch batteries anywhere, but maybe, you know, they're just going to, like, somehow make some type of device with the watch batteries and then throw it through a portal.
We haven't seen any watch batteries since first episode, right?
And maybe they're going to use it to kill Robert Redford.
Oh, okay. Man.
Yeah.
I like right. Robert Redford.
He's lived a long life, all right?
He's been president long enough.
Yeah, right? So it's been a minute.
Yeah.
All right.
He's a natural, though, being president.
Ba-dum-psh.
a couple other things. We were talking about bombs. When, and I keep wanting to call him Rorschach. Because he does remind me of Rorschach.
Or even with the beans and everything and the...
Yeah. But, and man, bean technology's come a long way. Can
that can opener was cool.
But Rorschach in the comic eats beans. He always lifts his mask up halfway. He doesn't take it off all the whole way. I kept thinking that this was episode 5, wasn't it? I think in issue...
Could he be related to him?
No, I just think he's an archetype like Rorschach. Yeah. But in issue 6 of the comic book, the original Watchmen comic book, you get Rorschach's backstory. It's really told more from his perspective. You get his origin story as well as some really gritty Rorschach stuff happens in issue six. So I kind of thought about this in relationship to this, you know, episode, because it's a very looking glass centric episode, gives you his backstory and the way that it ends, you're kind of like, oh man, like something's about ready to go down, and you're kind of worried for him. So
yeah,
there was a ticking we heard again in this episode as he begins to search that truck, finds the gun. And I'm just looking through my notes at some of the things that we hadn't talked about yet.
Let's close out his story, because I do want to get into Ozymandias' thing as well before we close it out. But so he does have the interaction with, I guess, is it Chief Blake now? I don't know. FBI agent, also chief of police. She's whatever she wants to be, much like Gozer. She's bugged the cactus. She kind of is prodding him and bugging him with the whole mirror guy thing. He uses that essentially to kind of sell Angela down the river.
And
she has to, like, you know, down these nostalgia pills, which is not going to be an enjoyable experience, I assume. And it looks like we'll get more of that in future episodes.
I hope so.
So basically he has taken up what Senator Keene wanted him to do. He seems at the end of the episode to be free of the fear that's kind of impacted him his whole life when he takes that machine and puts it in the trash, but then he goes back and picks it up. As he does that, 7th Cavalry is coming with a whole bunch of guns, and it kind of cuts right there before we see what happens. Do we think that he is dead?
No, I'm going to say he went in his bunker.
Well, his bunker is in a different place than his house.
It is?
Yeah,
it's a separate.
I thought it was right outside his house.
I think it's outside,
like,
his
backyard,
house, but...
kind of.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he's living in a man. It's not like he's living in. Didn't have like 40 acres like people did last week.
I can't see them killing him off this early in the show, but it's Damon, so all bets are off, right?
But I think it would show.
So you're saying,
right?
the king got his way. Angela got arrested, so.
He didn't need him anymore. Now he's a liability.
He didn't need him,
right?
Anymore.
Yeah. But
yeah, we'll see.
They didn't show us, so I'm going to assume he's not dead yet. That's my guess.
I'm going to say he's not dead.
And I think they're going to leave us in suspense. I don't think we're going to probably get the answer to that one way or the other next episode. It might be like the episode after that.
I think you're right.
You could be right on that.
Based on the previews. For what we're getting for next episode.
But there's not a lot of episodes, right? Is there only 8 or 9? How many is he doing?
9. There's only 9.
There's 4 more.
Yes, there's only 4 more left. And it's definitely moving along at a good clip.
And I like all of the answers that they're giving us. They're not holding anything back. I mean, yes, we're getting some things held back that's still a mystery, but, you know, like the whole Senator Keene.
They held back Wade dying or not. We don't know that. So they.
True, but.
This is a nice little cliffhanger, I think.
By the way, I think one of my favorite lines was from Senator Keene when he mentioned squid pro quo.
Yes. So.
Who knew how relevant that would be when they wrote this about a year ago? But yeah, there you go. Squid pro quo. So
that should be our
they saw the future.
That should have been the episode title for sure.
It really could have. Speaking of episode titles, I did want to mention this. The title comes from a quote by Jules Verne. The full quote is, "If there were no thunder, if there were no thunder," sorry, I messed up my writing here, "men would have no fear, or men would have little fear of lightning." Sorry, I murdered that thing. But yes, if there were no thunder.
You want to try it again?
No, I'm not going to. But
okay.
the idea there being.
If there was no thunder. There was no
men
thunder.
Would have little fear of lightning. There you go.
See, so. It's not so hard.
It was a little tricky, though. So. All right. You wanted to get to Veidt's story, and I know we have some listeners.
Yes. So, you know, this it's been building up to this moment of him trying to escape whatever bounds he's in, and we've all kind of theorized and thought similarly. In that, you know, he's in some other dimension, it would seem. And he kind of breaks those bonds, and he lands on a moon circling Jupiter, by the looks of it.
It looks like Jupiter, yeah.
So. And we see hundreds of bodies from his two clones, and he very unceremoniously like breaks them apart to form a type of SOS sign, and begs the question, and he kind of times it perfectly with a satellite passing by, because of course. And what are your thoughts here around?
Well, it said "Save me, D."
Yeah, so who's D?
So is it Dr. Manhattan?
Ah,
or is okay. It just is it right. "Save me, Doc"? Is it just? Because it, I froze it. I went back and I said, "What did it say?" And it said, "Save me," and just all we see is a D. So maybe there's an R there. So "Save me, doctors," or "Dr. M," or something like that. But I'm thinking he said, "Save me, Dr. Manhattan."
Because to me, it was like it was obvious that Dr. Manhattan put him there, right? Because they said the god, their god, isn't there anymore. So it made me kind of assume that Dr. Manhattan is the one that made them.
I would think so. So, but I think I couldn't think of anything else that would say "save me, D."
Delicious,
yeah.
Save me, delicious. he was trying to write "Surrender, Dorothy," but I kept thinking like of you know, Sally Jupiter was one of the characters, and so I thought that was great that we got to see Jupiter. What moon of Jupiter? Who knows? Io, Ganymede, Callisto, Europa. It's got to be one of the Galilean moons, right? Those are the most...
Sure.
Yeah, goats. Sounds legit.
But he's pulled back from into this other dimension, right? Which I thought was really cool.
I think he wasn't pulled back in the air. He's kind of pulled back at ground level, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
So is it mean it's like kind of it's made on this moon or whatever?
Or there's a bubble, like you know, there's like a whole dome, like a superficial dome that surrounds him.
And he whatever he's in, it's back in. I would say it's back in time because everything he has, he doesn't have modern day stuff, right?
Yeah, he's got no fancy bean can opener.
No, he doesn't. And that's why he wants Dr. Manhattan to save him.
It reminds me of two things from the comic. A, the Black Freighter story and the fact that
yes.
the, you know, using the dead bodies to save yourself. Like, I mean, yeah, this is perfect metaphor or allegory, however you want to look at that, I guess. And then the other thing it reminds me of is the smiley face on the moon, or not the moon, but on Mars. So there's the smiley face crater on Mars, which does exist, but it's also featured in the comic book pretty prominently as a place where Dr. Manhattan goes. So so that idea that something on a celestial planet would be that big enough that we could see it from observation. I like that. I like how that connects loosely, but still it tracks. So. Those are my thoughts from that. I mean, I love his storyline. I don't know what's happening with it. It's a lot of fun, but he's being arrested now. So I'd like to see what happens with that.
He got smacked around pretty good.
He did, but that guy warned him. Like
he did. You know, I wrote a letter. You just got a letter.
And we forgot to mention the Smileyos. We got the cereal that tastes like nothing. Very briefly. So,
Smileyos.
One other
your kids will hate them.
One other reference I noticed was at the very beginning of this episode, when we're getting the advertisement for New York. There's a couple standing out in front of a Broadway musical, and the musical is called Oppenheimer. So, which is the inventor of the nuclear bomb. So, yeah. And the famous quote by him. So, anyway, those were some of my last notes that I had about little nuggets and things that I was kind of like, just wondering about. So, and we got the Minutemen little clip.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun to watch.
It was interesting, though, right? It was interesting, you know, how it paired up with his story. I don't think that was ever in the comics, right?
It wasn't. But here's the thing, and I've been reading the Before Watchmen comics. Mm-hmm. And in the Before Watchmen comics, there is a whole, I don't know how many issues it is, but they delve into the Minutemen a lot further. Mm-hmm. And in that comic book, those two characters, Captain Metropolis and Hooded Justice, do have a relationship that is very physical. So, So I was, when I saw that, I was like, "Oh, that's interesting," because I don't remember that being in the original Watchmen, and it's one of those few things that I thought was expanded upon by my knowledge of reading the Before Watchmen comic, because I thought none of that was going to be canon, but clearly they took some aspect from it. So, because I don't remember those two characters, you know, being referenced together, unless that was something that was mentioned in Under the Hood, the Hollis Mason biography. Mm-hmm. So, for those that have read Under the Hood, I've kind of skipped those parts of Watchmen. Sorry. I'm not that diehard that I would read those parts.
Why are you even on this podcast, man? Damn you. I thought this was a really good episode, and, you know, something that Damon trades very highly in is in his backstory episodes. And what I really liked about this one is that it did tell this backstory for this interesting character, but it definitely felt like a comic book origin story, as well as really tied into the feel of the Watchmen comics, where there is this mystery, there is this kind of movement and thing happening in the background, this current that's taking our characters to this conclusion. And I think something he's tapped into very well, and it feels like the original series, is this kind of mystery in these characters that we're following as they try and figure out what the broader plan is. And what I like is that they are unfolding what that mystery is or what that story is. But from my perspective, I still don't know what the answer to it is. And that has me really enjoying this ride so far.
Concur. Yeah. Well, yeah, well said. So it's a great episode. So, I mean, as far as the episodes we've had this season, this is definitely up there on the meatiness of what we got. And
well, they seem to all be getting better. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Totes my goats. All right. Well, that is what we thought. It's time to get into what you all think with some listener feedback. But before we do it, we're going to take a quick commercial break.
Listener feedback.
All right, it's listener feedback time. We got some emails I'll get into. First, let's do the ones real post-episode so that we're fresh into what we just talked about. First up is Ethan, a.k.a. Mando Calrissian. Hola. What an amazing episode. I think it's direct links to the original book made this shine. I've been looking forward to the Looking Glass episode for a while now, and I think it really delivered. From the fact they showed the big squid to Steven Spielberg directing Pale Horse as this universe's answer to Schindler's List, Angela 2, All the Pills, Tim Blake Nelson gone. So many good leftover vibes. Awesome. Have a good week. Ethan, a.k.a. Mando Calrissian. next up is Ethan. Another Ethan.
Wait, is it a different Ethan?
Different Ethan.
What we used to call the other Ethan was Good Ethan, right?
Jay, Jack, and Matt. I've been listening to the podcast and finally have watched it on time so I can send in an email, hopefully in time. I thought the episode was amazing. Seeing the opening scene and the squid covering New York was so well shot. Also, to seeing Michael Imperioli in the commercial for Tourism mean that The Sopranos still exists in the alternate history of The Watchmen? Good question. It's a good question. I mainly wanted to write this email to praise the stellar acting of Tim Blake Nelson. Over the weekend, I watched Oh Brother, Where Art Thou for the millionth time, and it got me in the mood to watch The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. So I've gotten a ton of time with Tim Blake Nelson this week. He seems to make everything he is in better. The subtle moments throughout the episode all leads to the scene where he sees the video, and you can suddenly see all the emotions welling up inside him. He's been phenomenal all season. I'm so excited to see what else happens with this character later on. Can't wait to see what you guys have to say about the episode. Ethan, not that Ethan, but another Ethan from New Jersey.
That's why they can't kill him off.
I know. Title of his email was, Tim Blake Nelson deserves every award.
Wow. Can't argue it.
He's good. I love him as this character. I mean,
very... yeah, it's hard to argue with that.
Yeah.
Especially since it's the other Ethan.
Well, I hope they don't kill off either Ethan. So. Oh, were you talking about the character Looking Glass? Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Mirror Guy.
All right, so we have a couple emails here about Adrian's location, imprisonment theory, stuff like that. But first, it's from Chris LeBoy. It's a quick crackpot theory. Petey is Lube Man. Chris in Miami. What do you guys think there? Petey is Lube Man?
That's interesting.
You know what? He does have that build.
He does. Yeah. I like that. I like that idea.
I never thought about that, but I think he's right.
And then another one here from Chris in Miami. This is Adrian's location. Hello, guys. Love the podcast. Originally followed your last podcast and traveled from Miami to attend the finale viewing at the Orpheum. For that experience, I am eternally grateful.
You're welcome, Miami man.
I'd just like to point out a couple things about where I believe Adrian to be. In episode 3, you can see a gray featureless globe on Adrian's workshop. Also in episode 4, just as the catapulting scene ends, there's a close-up of the moon. I believe Dr. Manhattan retired Adrian to the moon, and he is surviving in a similar but more advanced oxygen dome like Dr. Manhattan created for Laurie on Mars in the source material. Lastly, I think the clone babies are created by Dr. Manhattan as beaded on his comment that he wants to create life. Thanks, Chris of Miami. Not a bad theory. Especially in this episode where they're talking about their god left. I mean, the Dr. Manhattan's always references a god, so I think that works. And then lastly, Tim from St. Paul. Hey, fellas, my theory is that Lady True is holding Adrian prisoner. My reasoning is that Lady True has the statue of Adrian, and someone remarked that he looks so old. I also believe there are some time shifts happening, so maybe this figures in somehow. At the very least, she has access or can see him somehow. That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it. P.S. Can we get an Islands in the Stream sing-along next pod? Full song, just not a snippet. Tim from St. Paul.
Sorry, you can come to the Raleigh meetup, and I will gladly serenade you with that. So,
If
you're not there, I'm not singing the song. So all bets
off. Wow.
And for those that don't know, yes, we do a podcast meetup every year. And most, or at least the past few years, our good friend Dennis brings a karaoke machine. And usually Saturday nights is karaoke night. So,
Matt, couldn't you just stream it on Facebook Live or something?
That's too much effort. No. But I'm going to play Kenny Rogers' character, though, if I sing that song.
No, you're not going to be
Dolly Parton? No.
Yeah, Dolly Parton?
No. I'll do Dolly.
It's too high for me. I can't reach
Michael Scott
range.
Did it, right? If I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Thank you for all your emails. Great theories there.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. No, and thanks for all of the feedback that can come into the show, either whether it's immediate or a week later. So
we didn't get one from David Gott?
No got email.
Wow, he's probably working on episode 2 or something like that.
He's a busy man, right? Busy guy.
He was on vacation for a while, wasn't he?
Yeah, sure. That sounds good. All right. That is going to wrap up this episode of Watchmen with Jay, Jack, and Matt. Give us a call at 385-309-0311.
Calling time.
Also send an email to watchmenjjm@gmail.com. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/JNJackGroup. If you use Amazon, use our link, jnjack.com/Amazon. And we want to especially take some time to thank the people that make this show possible, our patrons, over at patreon.com/JNJack. Especially Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Richter, Maggie the Magnificent, Joanne with the Plan, Drake the Destroyer, and Ed the Creepy Letter Carrier. Find a full list of all of our patrons that we thank on jnjack.com. You can also find a easy button to click to go to the Patreon page. Whether you give $1 or more a month, everything goes to our production and all of our podcasters, and these podcasts would not be possible without your contributions. All right, that is it for this week's episode. We'll see you all next week. Hasta luego, and goodbye.
Great show, kids. One in a million.
Wait, that's my line. And by the way, I was going to say, great show, kids. One in a puppy incinerator? Does that work? It's very unique.
I know. I'm still getting used to the lightning, being afraid of that, and or thunder, or doesn't what lightning. I can't remember.
Oh, God. Bye.
Bye.